A sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rem, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on August 21, 1994, in the Wisdom Literature Series, entitled Wisdom for Life. The scripture readings were selected verses from Psalm 25 and Proverbs 8, verses 22 through 36. The text for the sermon is Proverbs 8, verses 35 and 36. Please note that preceding the sermon, we've included his introduction to the reading of Proverbs. Copyright, Grand Valley State University.
Continuing with the scripture, the lesson is from the book of Proverbs in the 8th chapter. The book of Proverbs is one of the books that we designate the wisdom literature, as was the book of Job, and as will be the book of Ecclesiastes next week. The book of Proverbs deals with wisdom. Wisdom is a Hebrew feminine noun, chokmah, and in some of these poems, wisdom is personified. We might say that the scripture lesson is Lady Wisdom speaking to us this morning. I hope it's as much of a relief to you as it is to me to be out of the book of Job into something light, the book of Proverbs. It is one of the wisdom books, as I said, and it is a book that I've never spent much time in. I've seldom preached from. I've made various sorties into the book of Proverbs, and I'd read a few verses, and it just seemed like this old common sense, a little bit trivial. There was no story there. I just never have been attracted to it. I thought that it was simply the gathering together of aphorisms and maxims and proverbs from ancient cultures that made a lot of sense, but over which I didn't really care to linger too long. However, on more serious study, I find that I have neglected, in the wisdom books in general and in Proverbs in specific, a very rich mine of spiritual direction and guidance. There is a lot of wisdom in this wisdom book. And I learn that the wisdom books were a strong affirmation of life, and that in the wisdom books we have the distillation of generations and centuries of observation of and the living of life as it is, as things really are. And what we have now specifically in the book of Proverbs is the invitation to follow the way of wisdom and to find life and to avoid the path of foolishness, which leads to destruction and death. Lady Wisdom, as it were, Sophia, the Hebrew word, somewhat akin to Logos, the Greek word, that personification of wisdom and order and principle in the whole cosmic order, Lady Wisdom invites us to choose wisely, to live well, in order to find life. And as we can only scratch the surface of this book this morning, let me simply give you some fundamental assumptions of wisdom. Not exhaustive at all, but I think at least enough to perhaps whet your appetite and give you a modest introduction to what this literature, and specifically this particular book, is composed of. And the first thing that I would point out is that in the wisdom literature, there is an affirmation of life. The toast with a glass of wine in the Jewish society, l'chaim, to life, is a hallmark of a Jewish culture, of a Jewish perspective on human existence. There is something wonderful in Jewish society. They celebrate life in a marvelous manner. Rabbi Harold Kushner, who has earlier written some books, last year published a book entitled To Life, which is a marvelous survey of Jewish faith and life and community, in which he points out that that is the hallmark of Jewish existence, to life, an affirmation of life, a strong positive regard for life, a valuing of life. That is the whole Hebrew tradition. It is very definitely a central theme in the wisdom literature. Walter Brueggemann has written a book about the wisdom literature, in which he is entitled, In God We Trust, In Man We Trust. And that is a spin-off or a kind of a derivation of this basic positive regard for the human creature and for human existence. The book of Proverbs, as all of wisdom literature, was an attempt to gain knowledge in order to have mastery of life, to have mastery of life here and now. This world, this existence, this is God's gift. This is God's moment. We should enter fully into it. We should wring the best out of it. We should live with joy and with delight. And we should exploit all the possibilities that are ours in a creation which God called into being and said is very good. The Jew says, enter into all of it fully, enjoy it fully, delight in it before the face of God. There was no question about that. In the affirmation of human existence, it was human existence before the face of God. Laced throughout the book of Proverbs, you will read that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Fear and sense of reverence and awe. Living before the face of God, conscious that one lives before the face of God. Living before the face of God, then enter with zest into the fullness of the human experience, for it is God's gift. And we need to hear that. Particularly those of us who come as a part of the Christian tradition, both really Catholic and Protestant, particularly the Western Latin tradition into which we have flown, out of which we have flown as the Protestant Reformation tradition. There, the central emphasis was not, as in Eastern Orthodoxy, on the resurrection and celebration, but rather on cross, crucifixion, sin, and guilt. And we have been nurtured in a rather gloomy view of the human experiment. We have been given, I believe, a kind of negative perspective on the human person and on human experience. We are the inheritors of a few statements by Paul that have then been systematized and absolutized by Augustine and by Luther and Calvin. We are the children of the doctrine of original sin. We believe in total depravity. And as the psychologist Maslow says, the human person will generally live up to or down to the expectations that are held out for him or her. And our view of human life and the human person has been a rather negative view. We are suspect of motives, of intentions, and rather negative on the human scene as a whole. And that's too bad. We've lost something that was intrinsic to the Jewish, to the tradition of Israel. And that was a strong affirmation of life, of human life, of human existence. We could well go back and imbibe some of that positive feeling about life here and now. That was a basic assumption, an affirmation of life. And I suppose somewhat of a corollary of that. In the wisdom literature and in Israel's tradition, the human person was viewed as capable and responsible. Capable and responsible of making decisions that would lead to life. Part of the tradition was not only the priest and the prophet with whom we are familiar, but also the sage who reflected on life, who observed life carefully and patiently, and who rendered wise counsel as to the path that led to life. And thus the invitation to choose life and to avoid those choices which would lead to destruction and to death. The Hebrew, the Old Testament tradition, as we're wont to call it, believed that the human person was capable to decide and responsible to decide in all of the decisions, the major dimensions of human life. And that doesn't mean that they were naive about human nature, as though the human person was basically good. But neither would they agree with Augustine and Luther and Calvin that human nature was basically evil. They would rather say that the human person is made up of a little bit of both. In fact, I suspect that most of you are not so different from me. A little bit of both. We are a mixed bag. There are times, aren't there times, when you feel pretty good about something that you did? And aren't there times when you despise yourself? Don't we know about acts every day that are heroic? And don't we know of instances every day in which the human person has been a scoundrel? Isn't there a constant interweaving of both in the experience of all of us? And so, in the wisdom literature, it was not a naivete, as though the human person was basically good and prone to choose the right. The invitation was there. And the person was understood as being capable of making choices and responsible for those choices and reaping the consequences of those choices, be they the right choices or the wrong choices. The invitation was there because the human person was viewed as capable and responsible of deciding. And therefore, there was a responsibility placed on a person. No cheap cop-out. Well, I'm only human. You're only human? Precisely the point. Therefore, stand up and decide. And you have a choice to make. Choose life. Avoid the path of destruction. In the multitude of human decisions that we make every day, life was affirmed. The human person was understood to be capable and responsible to decide and to choose wisely. And the authority upon which decisions were made was human experience. Now listen carefully to me, because this is where the rub comes. The choices are to be made on the basis of the authority of human experience. That means that you can't open up the book and find a text and find the answer. That means that morality or ethical choice cannot be laid on us from beyond ourselves. That means that there was a consistency between Proverbs and the book of Job when God in the world said, don't bother me with that stuff. You can figure that out for yourselves. You've got minds. You've got experience. Decide and choose wisely. Order your lives. Now, the Hebrew person always understood that he was ordering his life before the face of God, and that there was an order out there. All of these proverbs and maxims and aphorisms are the distillation of the wisdom that comes after years and years of reflection, centuries and generations of reflection, pursuing that ultimate. But that ultimate, the good and the true and the beautiful, if you will, is never at our disposal. The best we can do is to get a relative glimpse and grasp of it and to act accordingly on the best judgment that we can make. And there's no authoritarian rule to be laid on us from outside of us. We are called upon to the careful observation, the living of life as it is, and the making of decisions accordingly in the midst of the concrete context of our everyday lives. Well, you say, what about the Ten Commandments? Aren't those moral absolutes? No. Nobody walked out yet. What are they? They are those universal principles coming out of Israel that have been proven in the test of time. They are reflective of, for example, the Code of Hammurabi that predated them. They are reflective of Mideastern culture, the peoples that surrounded them. They are the best wisdom possible for a fulfilled, successful human life and the possibility of human community and society. But those moral absolutes didn't drop out of heaven. There were no stones that were penetrated by a finger. They were the best wisdom that could be distilled out of the ongoing human drama by the best possible people who realized they were living with fear and trembling before the face of God. And so it is with every decision that we have to make in the living of our lives. You can't go to a book. That's a cop-out. You can't ask a priest. That's a cop-out. You can't ask the church. That's a cop-out. That's authoritarianism. People like authoritarianism, really, even though in the 18th century we threw off all authoritarianisms. The human bud started to flower in the 15th century in the Renaissance, and then the Reformation came along as an aspect of that, but that shut down the blossoming of the human spirit with one more authoritarian load. Finally, 18th century, age of reason, enlightenment, the human person said no to church, no to Bible, no to the divine right of kings, no to every authority, the emancipation of the human person. Well, pendulums swing too far. And the enlightenment, for all that it has given us, has been found wanting in that to make the human rationality the limit of reality is to truncate the mystery of life. And so now maybe we're in the postmodern age, some would say. But what in a postmodern age we must never do is to go back and put our necks under the yoke of some new authoritarian control. Now, if those are basic assumptions, then let me draw them into the postmodern age, the culture of which we are all a part. What does this mean for the decisions that face us as a society and as human persons? Well, it means that fundamentalism is a dead-end street. Whether it be Christian or Jewish or Islamic, in a hinge time in history, when the old ways have been shown to come up short and the new ways are not yet clear, people get very fearful. They feel very insecure. In fact, it's a good time for the church because people fearful come to church seeking answers, wanting a priest wanting someone, some prophet, to say it clearly, make it simple, make it burn. Answer these quandaries for me. Give me some ground to stand on. And oh, the church is all too happy to beckon those who would come to find in it a crutch in order to avoid having to stand up and be an adult and make mature decisions in this world where it's so ambiguous and hard to decide. But fundamentalism is not the answer. It is simply the reiteration of yesterday's answers to today's questions. You cannot go home. You cannot go back. And when it seems that the tide of society is moving back, you can be assured that it is a reactionary movement that will explode in ever greater force one of these days. No, the church ought not to be into pandering to people's weaknesses. What we need to do is call people, as the wisdom literature did, as the sages did, to be adult, to be mature, to look at the evidence, to live with observation and discernment, and to make decisions that lead to life. Let me be concrete for just a moment. The Pope says, for example, regarding women in ministry, that he has no right to make a decision that women can be ordained to priesthood because Jesus chose men. And that, if the Holy Father will forgive me, is ridiculous. Jesus did not choose any women to be his disciples in that age, in that culture, for it would not have been tolerated. But it would not have been tolerated in that patriarchal age because women were devalued. Women were absolutely understood to be second-class citizens, less capable, less gifted. Now, in the movement of culture, if we really believe that women are equally human beings, equally gifted, equally capable, then to perpetuate a decision out of the past that was based on an understanding of women that we no longer hold, to perpetuate that decision to the present when we understand something quite differently, that is fundamentalism. That is blindness. That is oppression. And that cannot stand the light of day. You see, you can't have it both ways. To say, I refuse to ordain women to ministry, but equally value them, is a contradiction. They weren't ordained back then because they were not equally valued. Had they been equally valued, they could have been a part of it. If they are equally able to serve, then they have every right to enter fully into Christian ministry. Well, where else would you like to go? In the last 2 months, in this congregation, I have dealt with families in the critical care unit with living wills. If you haven't gotten yours made out, I would suggest you do it. We may think about the cranky, kinky Kevorkian that he's out in left field somewhere, but I'll tell you, he's dealing with a real life issue. And to say that he is wrong and that human life is not at our disposal and that that is something for God's decision is simply to cop out. The moment you inoculate, the moment you put out on a respirator, the moment you give an antibiotic, you are playing God. You have taken responsibility. You have entered into the process. You have interrupted the natural course of nature, and you can't stop. You can't stop simply because it is a situation of fear and trembling. You are responsible, and God says, for God's sake, stand up and be an adult and make a decision. We must be responsible. We must choose the ways that lead to life. We must discern. We must struggle. We must talk together. We must dialogue. It's not clear. It's not simple. It's not black and white. These are decisions that wrench us, but we are humans created in the image of God and called to think and to decide. And we could move the question of human sexuality. 2 or 3 years ago, the Presbyterians came out with a report feeling that probably the church ought to deal with this fundamental issue in our human existence, given what we know today about the human person. And the report was defeated by the General Assembly, 400 and some to 30 some, and I said in a sermon at that time that I would have been on the minority side, and I think we lost a family that day. But I'll say it again. The Lutherans didn't do any better. They had a report last year. It never even made it to the Synod. There was such an uproar because people don't want to talk about human sexuality because it may tamper with the moral absolutes. Well, that's ridiculous. The moral absolutes arose in a concrete context where people struggled together to find the way of life and then to take yesterday's answers and absolutize them for today, apart from the concrete situation in which we live, is to abdicate our responsibility to be human beings whom God gave minds and called us to think God's thoughts after God. The Episcopalian head bishop, Browning, said to the House of Bishops, when they meet in September and have their paper on human sexuality, just pass it without debate, because there's so many things that we don't know about and that we're going to disagree on. Let's not get into a debate. Just pass the sucker. Abortion. People willing to kill in order to abort abortion. Convinced that they know God's mind and God's will on that very difficult issue. The wisdom literature would say that God is pro-life because God is pro-choice. And God would expect us as responsible human beings to find our way in this maze in which there is no simple answer to any one of these issues that I've raised. But if I read the wisdom literature correctly, the one thing I may not do is try to find an answer in a book or in an institution or in an authority figure. You and I live before the face of God. We live in fear and trembling before the face of God, believing that there is an order. There is that which is true and good and beautiful. And we'll never capture it absolutely, only tentatively, provisionally, partially. And on the basis of that, we are called to decide and to act. I can't coddle you, friends. This is not a place where you can run for refuge from the tough decisions of the human story. Oh God, if the church were only a place where people, rather than being encouraged in their infancy, would be called to maturity. Seek wisdom. Act wisely. Find life. God will not abandon us in the search. Neither will God write simple answers in the sky. It's tough. It takes courage. But in the end, that's to live as a human being before the face of God.